Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Anne Ball, and Mario Ritter. Later, Alice Bryant will bring us this week's education report. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Federal Bureau of Investigation Director James Comey recently confirmed an investigation into Russian involvement in the 2016 United States elections. Comey said his agency is studying possible links between Russian officials and the election campaign of then-presidential candidate Donald Trump. He said U.S. intelligence had already found the Russian government took steps to influence the vote, with the goal of helping the businessman get elected. Trump has been in office for over 2 months. His administration has denied that he or members of his campaign team were in contact with Russian officials before the election. Comey told a congressional committee the FBI was still exploring possible ties between Trump's supporters and Russia. He promised that investigators would follow the facts wherever they lead. The FBI carries out investigations for the Justice Department, which is responsible for enforcing laws and administering justice. Some investigations involve other government agencies or officials. There have been examples of the FBI investigating possible crimes by U.S. presidents.
One of the most famous cases was the Watergate scandal, which led to the resignation of President Richard Nixon in 1974. 2 years earlier, five men were arrested for breaking into the offices of the Democratic Party. The break-in took place at the Watergate building in Washington, D.C. During an investigation of the break-in, U.S. lawmakers learned that Nixon had set up recording equipment in the White House. They discovered that discussions between the president and his aides had been recorded. In the recordings, Nixon was heard ordering officials to tell the Central Intelligence Agency to lie to the FBI in an effort to block the investigation. Several people working for Nixon went to jail for their involvement in the Watergate scandal. Nixon himself faced possible criminal charges, and an impeachment from office. On August 8, 1974, he went on national television to announce he would resign the next day.
I have never been a quitter. To leave office before my term is completed is abhorrent to every instinct in my body. But as president, I must put the interests of America first.
newspaper reporters Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein uncovered and documented the Watergate scandal. The two based their stories on a government official whom they did not identify in their reports. They instead called him Deep Throat. The identity of Deep Throat was kept secret for more than 30 years. In 2005, the unidentified source finally came forward. It was Mark Felt, who had served as the number two man in the FBI during the Watergate years. In a book, Felt said he understood that some people would always think he was wrong for secretly providing information to the reporters. But he added, "The bottom line is that we did get the whole truth out, and isn't that what the FBI is supposed to do?"
The White House tapes showed that before Watergate, Nixon considered removing the longest-serving director of the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover. Hoover led the FBI for 48 years, working for 8 different presidents from 1924 until his death in 1972. Hoover is credited with turning a new small agency into an international leader in law enforcement and national security. But he was criticized for aggressively using surveillance to collect information on private citizens and government officials. In some cases, he gave presidents damaging personal information about their political opponents. During the 1940s and 1950s, Hoover's leadership was criticized for going too far in campaigns against American communists and supporters of Nazi Germany. Later, he was seen as having little interest in protecting civil rights. Many police departments had failed to investigate crimes targeting blacks and other civil rights workers in the 1950s and 1960s. During the 1960s and early 1970s, the FBI was criticized for some of its investigations related to civil rights and Vietnam War protests. In 1975, a Senate committee found that FBI officials had acted wrongly or illegally a number of times. 4 years after Hoover left office, Congress passed a law limiting FBI directors to a single term of 10 years, a rule still in place today. U.S. presidents choose FBI directors and can also remove them. I'm Ann Ball.
And I'm Brian Lynn.
The Cambodian government has ordered a limit on interest rates on small loans. The decision comes before local elections are set to take place in June. the 18% limit on the microfinance industry interest rates takes effect on April 1st. Microfinance businesses operate in many developing countries. They accept deposits and provide small loans to people in the developing world. In Sokai is a 32-year-old Cambodian garment worker. She recently received a microfinance loan of $5,000. She must repay it within 4 years. I borrowed $5,000 and I bought chickens, built the house, and my husband bought a boat, fishing nets, and other items, she said. She will pay interest at a rate of 22% a year.
The new legislation will not reduce her loan payments because the law has not yet taken effect. Her loan is considered large for the Cambodian microfinance industry. 70% of microfinance industry, or MFI, loans are under $500. Sokai had not heard of the new law, but it has caused a lot of concern among the private microfinance businesses in Cambodia.
Microfinance loans are usually for less than 1 year. Their interest rates are very high, 30% or more. Microfinance industry supporters say this is necessary because the costs of servicing small, risky loans are higher. The high cost of the loans has not reduced demand, however. Cambodia's microfinance industry is growing quickly. In 2015, there were 1.5 million depositors and more than 2 million borrowers. MFIs are in every province of the country of 15 million people. Almost all the loans go to people living outside Phnom Penh, Cambodia's capital. Most borrowers are women.
The new law comes before local elections in June. A national vote is to take place in the middle of 2018. Supporters of the new law say the limit is meant to protect Cambodians from paying high rates. Lawmakers also want to increase access to Cambodia's financial system. Borrowers often use their land or home as a security for the loan. They can lose their property if they are unable to pay. Interest rate limits are not unusual. Many countries have them. But the World Bank says they are becoming less popular.
Some industry observers, however, say the law limiting interest rates will have a negative effect. Stephen Higgins is with Mekong Strategic Partners. The company gives business advice.
Ideally, we shouldn't have this cap. The interest rates in Cambodia for these small loans are actually amongst the lowest in the world, and people forget that.
Higgins says the cost of lending for small loans is high. He says microfinance businesses need to charge a 30% interest rate for a $500 9-month loan to make a small profit. Opponents of the limits say microfinance businesses may stop offering loans. That, they say, will force rural people to go to money lenders who charge much higher interest rates.
The Cambodia Microfinance Association is a non-profit organization based in Phnom Penh. it supports microfinance businesses. It says its members will need to reduce costs and become more efficient in order to survive. May Kalyan is an economist and advisor to the government. He supports the law. He says it will help protect small farmers from agriculture-related debt. He says that farmers who take out high-interest loans of 30% or more struggle to make a profit. CMA Chairman Huit Yong Tong says at least some CMA members will still offer small loans. But it is unclear whether the new interest rate limit will hurt deposits in microfinance businesses or will drive borrowers to higher-cost money lenders. I'm Mario Ritter.
Listening to VOA Learning English. Up next, Alice Bryant and Brian Lynn will have this week's Education Report.
Giving a presentation can be a scary task. It can be even more worrisome when the presentation is not in your native language. You may forget the English words for what you want to say. Or, like a lot of people, you may get nervous. But the good news is there are many tools you can use. Learning these tools can help you become a confident and effective presenter, even in English. Anna Uhl Chameau, a retired professor at George Washington University, developed a way of teaching language learners. Called Kala, the method explains how to use learning strategies to understand academic language and content. Learning strategies are thoughts and actions that help people learn better or perform tasks effectively. CALA stands for Cognitive Academic Language Learning Approach. Think of these strategies as tools that will make presentations easier and more enjoyable for the presenter and the audience. Many of the CALA strategies are useful for giving a presentation in your second language, but Chameau says three are especially useful: planning, monitoring, and self-evaluation. Let's start with planning.
Planning involves everything you do to prepare and practice before giving your presentation. This includes deciding what your main ideas are and making notes of the points you want to make. Chameau emphasizes that having a good understanding of your subject is very important. This understanding makes it possible to talk about your topic fluidly and confidently during your presentation. After deciding on main ideas and notes, some people even like to write out every word they're going to say.
I know a lot of learners, and I mean not just learners of English, but people in general, even native speakers, feel that they want to write out everything they're going to say. This gives them some comfort.
If you do this, Chameau says, once you are satisfied with the wording, then it's time to reduce those words to very, very short notes. During the planning period, you will also prepare your visuals, such as on PowerPoint, Prezi, or some other program. Chameau recommends that each visual only have a few bullets of your points and very few words on it. Or, even better, is if you have only images or easy-to-see graphics and no words. For example, if you are giving a presentation about things to do during summer in Washington, D.C., your visual might be an image of something exciting that takes place in that season.
The next step of planning is practice. Chameau says practicing is the most important step because it will help remind you of the points that the short phrases on your visuals represent. Practice saying what you want to say about each visual. The more you verbalize everything you want to say, the easier it will be to talk comfortably about the points. Practicing will also help you avoid doing two things: reading from your notes or memorizing any part of your presentation. When you practice, do so in front of another person or a few people. Even your electronics can help you, Chameau says.
Use a friend or a family member as your audience, and practice in front of a mirror looking at yourself, and turn on your smartphone and record yourself, and then you can listen to what you really sound like.
And as you practice, visualize being in front of the real audience.
Imagine in your head the audience. See all those faces and expressions, and imagine that they're there right in front of you.
Chameau also recommends a tactic that can quickly get any audience interested and helps to decrease the nervous feeling. Ask your audience a question. For example, if your topic is summer activities in Washington, D.C., you might ask a question like, how many of you have ever gone to an outdoor concert in Washington, D.C.? Asking a question also makes a presentation more like a two-way conversation and less like a lecture. When you spend time preparing and practicing, you gain confidence and comfort and will feel less worry on presentation day.
The next strategy is monitoring. Monitoring is watching, listening to, or checking something for a special purpose over a period of time. You should monitor yourself at two different points: during your practice sessions and during the actual presentation. To monitor during practice, Chameau says make a list of questions to ask yourself.
But some examples are, did I state my topic and objectives at the beginning? Did I provide some examples and details for each main idea? Did I restate the topic and conclusions at the end?
A big part of developing comfort in front of a group, she says, comes from the effort you put into practicing. If you practice enough, you will not need to monitor much during the actual presentation. When you're in front of the real audience, monitoring can help you quickly observe issues and find solutions.
One of the most important things to monitor is, am I nervous? What can I do about it? One of the things about monitoring is that when you're monitoring your performance, you notice problems, and it allows you an opportunity to try to solve those problems.
Chameau says if you realize you're feeling nervous, a good learning strategy to use is self-talk, mentally telling yourself you are going to do well.
Like, I really worked hard on this. I know my PowerPoint looks good. I'm going to take a deep breath, and I have practiced so much. I know I can do this.
And if you forget English words during your presentation, you can use the strategy called substitution, choosing different words to say what you want to say. Other questions to keep in mind while you're giving your presentation are, am I speaking too fast or too slow? Am I looking at my audience? Am I smiling from time to time?
That brings us to self-evaluation, our third learning strategy. In self-evaluation, you examine how well you did. The main difference between monitoring and self-evaluation is when it happens. Self-evaluation takes place after each practice session and after your actual presentation. Chameau suggests making a list of questions for these two evaluation periods. For after your practice sessions, include questions such as, did I look at the audience enough? How much more do I need to practice? And how well did I do? And for after the actual presentation, ask yourself, what did I do well? And what do I need to improve? The Kala method says understanding what strategies work well for you is important. That is especially true when you evaluate a time you did something well. Those strategies that helped you do well are the ones you want to use again. Giving a presentation in your second language can indeed be frightening, but if you have a strong understanding of your subject and use these helpful tools, it will become easier and easier to speak in public. I'm Alice Bryant.
And I'm Brian Lynn.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.